Well, we're going to open up to Exodus chapter 38. Verse number 8 is where we're going to pick up. We are looking at this repetition about the elements of the tabernacle. We looked at it once before when God was telling Moses how they should be made. And now we're watching as Bezalel and Oholiab are in the process of making all these things. So we've got all the stuff for the actual shrine building already described. We talked about the altar of burnt offering, the last thing yesterday. And now let's finish up with the rest of the things that they're working on, starting with the great big water tank that they need near the front entrance to the shrine building. Verse number 8 of Exodus 38 says, "He made the basin of bronze and its stand of bronze from the mirrors of the ministering women who ministered in the entrance of the tent of meeting." Now, we don't have dimensions given anywhere here as to how big this thing is. I don't see it being like a lot of portrayals are, of looking like an oversized bird bath. I don't think that's what it is. It is, as the Hebrew word implies, a great big cauldron sort of thing, a big water tank. The stand that it sits on is probably to keep it, keep the water from spilling off into the nearby dirt and making a big mud pile. And so this great big tank sits on top of a platform, and these things are made out of a whole bunch of collected bronze mirrors. Back at this time in history, most mirrors were made of metal rather than of glass with some sort of backing on it. So those things have been collected up out of the booty taken from the Egyptians and melted down, smelted, and shaped into this water tank. Verse number 9, he goes on to the court. By the way, the water tank, even though it's not mentioned here, would have also had some sort of rings, attachment points, where they could put rings in place or put poles in place and carry it from place to place. They'd dump the water out or empty the water out and then carry the empty container to the next site and then fill it back up. There are more details, no doubt, on how all these things are made that's not included in the text. My guess is that there was probably some sort of drainage system on this big tank to allow it to be drained easily. In fact, it may have had spigots on key places around the sides of it so that more than one priest could be getting water out of it in order to wash their hands and feet before they went on to the next part of their duty. And it would have been filled on a regular basis by a bucket brigade that would keep it topped off, because they would have needed a lot of water in order to accomplish all the sacrifices that they are doing every day. All right, so let's now talk about the surrounding court and how they had this big fabric wall that would need to be taken down and moved from place to place as well. Verse number 9, he made the court. For the south side, the hangings of the court were of fine twisted linen, 100 cubits. So that's 172 feet and 6 inches whenever we use the long Egyptian cubit, which is 20 inches and 20.7 inches. There are 20 pillars and their 20 bases were of bronze, but the hooks of the pillars and their fillet were of silver. Now, this tells us that it wasn't one great big long curtain. It was actually 20 different panels between posts in order to form this wall of fabric. And each of those therefore would have been, what is it, 5 cubits in order to form the 100. So each panel would basically be 8 feet, 7.5 inches. Then we have the description of the posts that were between them that would support them and hold them up. And then it's a repeat for the north side. For the north side, there were hangings of 100 cubits. Their 20 pillars, their 20 bases were of bronze, but the hooks and the pillars and their fillets were of silver. The west side were hangings of 50 cubits, so it's half the size of the north and south walls. So it's about 86 feet and 3 inches. Their 10 pillars and their 10 bases, the hooks of the pillars and their fillets were of silver. So each of the panels, again, about 5 cubits wide. And then on the front of the east, 50 cubits. Now the east side is the entrance side. So it's not a full-fledged panel wall across it. Instead, you've got hangings, verse 14, hangings for one side of the gate were 15 cubits. So that's 25 feet, 10.5 inches. And with their pillars and their three bases. And so for the other side. So that's 15 cubits to one side, 15 cubits to the other side. So that's a total of 30 cubits, which leaves 20 cubits left for that particular side. And it says, verse 16, all the hangings around the court were of fine twisted linen. The bases for the pillars were of bronze, but the hooks of the pillars and their fillets were of silver. The overlaying of their capitals were of silver, and the pillars of the court were filleted with silver. So you've got the description of each of these posts that the panels were stretched between. And then you have to keep in mind that those pillars would have been, they would have had a base that held them in place, but also some some ropes that would have then been staked into the ground at an angle to keep them stabilized. You know how it works whenever you're putting up any type of a tent. You always have tent posts that are holding ropes that are keeping the fabric tight where it belongs. And so that's the way it's working with this. Now, as I said, there's about 20 cubits left to account for on this east side. And so that's what we refer to as the gate. Verse 18, the screen for the gate of the court was embroidered with needlework in purple, in blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twisted linen. It was 20 cubits long. So it's either part of that wall, which then can be pulled back, drawn back for entry. And it's very beautiful. It's much more ornate than any of the other fabric walls in this courtyard. Or this particular section either set farther into the courtyard so that you would go and go around the sides, kind of like you do modern day no-touch entrance bathrooms when you go to the mall or some sort of public venue. You just go around a dividing wall to get to the other side. So it might have been something like that. Maybe it was farther forward, but somehow you came through this very decorative tent panel. It was 20 cubits long or wide, so that's 34 feet and 6 inches. And then it was 5 cubits height in height, and so that's the whole wall. Everywhere was 8 feet, 7.5 inches tall. That's exactly the half of the height of the shrine building. So you would have everywhere into the encampment of Israel, you would have been able to see the shrine building rising above the wall, the fabric wall of the courtyard. And that's, I think, very much on purpose to draw your attention to the shrine building. So it was 20 cubits long and 5 cubits high in its breadth, corresponding to the hangings of the court. Their pillars were 4 in number, their 4 bases were of bronze, their hooks of silver, the overlaying of their capitals and their fillets of silver. And all the pegs for the tabernacle, what we would call tent pegs, and for the court all around were of bronze, which bronze is the much more durable metal for outside. These are the records of the tabernacle. The tabernacle of the testimony as they were recorded at the commandment of Moses, the responsibility of the Levites under the direction of Ithamar, the son of Aaron, the priest. Now that helps us for later, that all of these things are portable. And so they will be put together for the very first time at Mount Sinai. And then when it comes time for them to move, they'll take it apart and move it to the next encampment and rebuild it. And this taking down and putting it back up and transporting it in between the places, Ithamar, the son of Aaron the priest, is the guy that's going to make sure that that happens on an organized basis. So he's kind of the gang of the boss, or the boss of the gang that gets all this done. And we'll have more special details about that later, because each of the Levites' families will be given specific things to carry and to be responsible for. Verse 22, Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, made all that he who is commanded Moses. This is Miriam's grandson, because Hur is her husband. So this makes Bezalel the grandnephew of Moses and Aaron. And God specified he would be the one to put in charge of this, because he's just so talented, so gifted by God. And with him was Oholiab, the son of Ahisamach, of the tribe of Dan, an engraver and designer and embroiderer in blue and purple and scarlet yarns and of fine twisted linen. So these two guys together, probably in their 20s is what I'm guessing, maybe into their 30s. They are not just simply gifted by God. I suspect that they had already been using these gifts in Egypt. They may have been trained in some of the things that the Egyptians did design-wise. And now God is redirecting all of that energy toward the building of this tabernacle. Verse 24, all the gold that was used for the work in all the construction of the sanctuary, the gold for the offering was 29 talents and 730 shekels by the shekel of the sanctuary. So this is not talking about coined money, even though we think often about shekels as being coined money. This is talking about weight. And when you go with the understanding we have of their weight system, that's roughly a ton of gold that gets used in this in the construction of the tabernacle. If you just go on a modern day per ounce cost of that, then that means that the gold used in the tabernacle would be worth about $40 million today. Verse 28, the silver from those of the congregation who were recorded was 100 talents and 1,775 shekels by the shekel of the sanctuary. Again, we're not talking about money here, we're talking about weight. And so this is roughly 4 tons of silver. Now, silver is not nearly as valuable as gold. The rule of thumb in the ancient world was pretty much that gold was about worth 10 times as much as the equivalent amount of silver. So in effect, what we see here is well over $1 million worth of silver by today's cost per ounce. So you can see that there's a lot of value in the material that's being handed here. Verse 26, a beka, a head, that is half a shekel by the shekel of the silver of the sanctuary, for everyone who was listed in the record from 20 years old and upward. This is kind of giving you a sense of what they're contributing per person in order to get this stuff done. Verse 27, the 100 talents of silver were for casting the bases of the sanctuary and the bases of the veil, 100 bases for the 100 talents, a talent, a base. So talent is roughly 75 pounds. I think that's correct. And so these things are going to be heavy enough to keep stuff in place. And of the 1,775 shekels, he made hooks for the pillars and overlaid their capitals and made fillets for them. The bronze that was offered was 70 talents and 2,400 shekels. So again, let's calculate that out. That's roughly 2.5 tons of bronze that gets used in the building of the tabernacle complex. And at the cost that we know about today's copper market, that's about $15,000 worth of bronze. Verse number 30, with it, he made the bases for the entrance of the tent of meeting and the bronze altar and the bronze grating for it and all the utensils of the altar, the bases around the court, the bases of the gate of the court, all the pegs of the tabernacle, and all the pegs around the court. So if it's going to be outside, it's typically going to be bronze, or if it's in an area much more holy, it'll be silver. The gold is mostly being used on the inside of the tabernacle. Chapter 39. From the blue and purple and scarlet yarns, they made finely woven garments for ministering in the holy place. They made the holy garments for Aaron, for as he who is had commanded Moses. So now we shift to the uniform of the high priest. He made the ephod of gold, blue and purple and scarlet yarns, and fine twisted linen. So the ephod is the special vest that kind of just goes over the head with a couple of armholes. So it's the base on which then the breast piece is placed. They hammered out gold leaf, and he cut it into threads to work into the blue and the purple and the scarlet yarns and into the fine twisted linen in skilled design. He made for the ephod attaching shoulder pieces joined to it as at its two edges. So think about epaulets up at the top of the shoulders from the neck opening across to the arm openings. And the skillfully woven band on it was of one piece with it and made like it of gold, purple, or blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twisted linen as he who is commanded Moses. They made the onyx stones enclosed in silk settings of gold filigree and engraved like the engravings of a signet according to the names of the sons of Israel. And he set them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod to be stones of remembrance for the sons of Israel as he who is had commanded Moses. So the epaulets have onyx stones in gold settings and in either raised lettering or recessed lettering are the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. 6 on one epaulet onyx stone and 6 on the other. And this is so that Aaron, when he's wearing this uniform, is symbolically carrying the tribes of Israel with him into the presence of the Lord. Verse 8, he made the breastpiece in skilled work in the style of the ephod of gold, blue, purple, and scarlet yarns and fine twisted linen. It was square. They made the breastpiece doubled, a span its length, and a span its breadth when doubled. Now, a span is roughly the distance across the palm of your hand. So let's call it about 3.5 inches, something of that nature. So this little breastpiece is not huge. And it's going to have precious and semi-precious stones on its front. And it has a pocket behind it where the Urim and the Thummim are going to be stored. Verse 10, they set in it, that is, on the front of this little breastpiece, four rows of stones, a row of sardius, topaz, and carbuncle was the first row. And as I told you earlier when we first came across this, we can't be dogmatic as to what the modern equivalents are for all of these stones. Some of them seem to be relatively certain. Others are kind of up in the air still. So you can check a more detailed commentary that might help you on that. The second row, an emerald, a sapphire, and a diamond. Third row, a jacinth, an agate, an amethyst. The fourth row, a beryl, an onyx, and a jasper. They were enclosed in settings of gold filigree. And there were 12 stones with their names according to the names of the sons of Israel. They were like signets, each engraved with its name for the 12 tribes. So once again, on the stone face, and so they're all cut by a master jeweler. And so they got a flat face, and on that face, in either raised lettering, which would be the tougher of the two, or in recessed lettering, is the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. So that when Aaron goes into the presence of God on a regular basis, he will be bearing on his heart, in his bosom, the names of Israel symbolically. So he has them on his shoulders and he has them on his heart. They made on the breastpiece twisted chains like cords of pure gold, and they made two settings of gold filigree and two gold rings, and put the rings on the two edges of the breastpiece, and they put the two cords of gold and the two rings at the edges of the breastpiece. They attached the two ends of the two cords to the two settings of the filigree, and thus they attached it in front to the shoulder pieces of the ephod. So this little chest piece is hanging by a cord from the two epaulets. And then it is secured around the chest by other cords so that it doesn't flop around all over the place. Verse 19, they made two rings of gold, put them on the two ends of the breastpiece on the inside edge next to the ephod. They made two rings of gold and attached them in front to the lower part of the two shoulder pieces on the ephod at its seam above the skillfully woven band of the ephod, and they bound the breastpiece by its rings to the rings of the ephod with a lace of blue so that it should lie on the skillfully woven band of the ephod and that the breastpiece should not come loose from the ephod as he who is had commanded Moses. So that's what I was talking about. It fits nice and snug against the ephod because of these cords. He also made the robe of the ephod woven of all blue. The opening of the robe in it is like the opening of a garment with the binding around the opening so that it might not tear. So it's a reinforced opening. On the hem of the robe, they made pomegranates of blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twisted linen. They also made bells of pure gold and put the bells between the pomegranates all around the hem of the robe between the pomegranates, a bell and a pomegranate, a bell and a pomegranate around the hem of the robe for ministering as he who is had commanded Moses. So this is very decorative, and it even adds an element of sound so that you can hear the priest going about his work. They also made the coats woven of fine linen for Aaron and his sons, and the turban of fine linen, and the caps of fine linen, and the linen undergarments of fine twisted linen, and the sash of fine twisted linen of blue and purple and scarlet yarns embroidered with needlework, as he who is had commanded Moses. They made the plate of the holy crown of pure gold and wrote on it an inscription like the graving of a signet, holy to he who is. And they tied it with a cord of blue on the turban above, as he who is had commanded Moses. So even the little nameplate on the front of the turban, the hat, was raised lettering, just like a signet ring. But it designated that the person wearing this uniform is holy to the Lord. Let's go out there and wear the name of Jesus on our lives in exactly the same way.